Productions. So I just wanna talk about this thing that's in my brain. It keeps me from wanting to go on, but I want some gain. Maybe a little fame. Yeah, oh yeah. My man, it's good to have you here. Welcome back to the We the Patriots podcast. Good friend of mine, Kevin Kwadi.
Pleasure
it's
to
been
be
a
here.
Fucking long time since I've been able to hang out with you on the regular, dude. It's fucking good to have you back.
Yeah, I know. It's been since we did like daily shit, had to have been high school.
Pretty much.
Yeah, because once we graduated, I mean, kind of went separate ways for a few years. College mm-hmm. for me, your own shit for you, but full yeah, circle man. Now. So.
Oh, dude, I love it. I love it, dude. And working mm-hmm. with you, seeing you bust out shit that you enjoy doing and seeing how fucking much you love it, dude.
Yeah,
it's something to see.
I don't know. From high school, it's definitely gone uphill.
Right.
I finally found like a good medium is what you would call it. Doing mm-hmm. the airbrush and the painting.
When did you start to get into that shit?
So the airbrush or the artwork in general?
In general first, yeah. When like did you start to pick that shit up from like a teacher specifically, or was that something you just kind of picked up on your own?
So I guess artwork in general, ever since I could write, I could draw. I mean,
fair enough.
I was always into it, and there's been points in my life where it's like dipped down to nothing, and then it's gone up to the point now where I'm trying to like make a career out of it.
Right.
So I drew pretty much my whole life. Getting into high school, we had to take an art requirement.
So you're forced to do something.
So, yeah. I mean, you had to do... It was either, like, the sculpture stuff with the yep. ceramics, or you yep. had to go through and do the...
I'm gonna cover my horrible head hair.
Or you had to go and do, like, the drawing stuff.
Yep.
So I ended up for the first... Trying to get, like, all the gen ed stuff out of the way with high school. I wanted to do... Get, like, my art requirement out of the way. So I got right. into the ceramics... Excuse me, with Miss Flug. So I did that, doing sculpture with right. clay. And I started that class, and I feel like this might have been what helped me progress. I started that class dislocating my shoulder football year
right.
before we even started school. So freshman year, played football, dislocated my shoulder, showed up like first day of class in a sling.
Yep.
And Ms. Fluke told me, like, and I've this is like digging back to my memories now. I mean, we're pushing 8 years at this point.
At this point, yeah. It's wild to think about,
crazy.
Right?
Crazy. It's unreal. So she's like, you probably, like, might want to look into this class later, like, down the road when you have two hands. And I'm like, no. Like, I'm not a big school person, and I'm not going to go out of my way to do more stuff for school. So my schedule was all set up, and I yep. wasn't going to these counselors and talking to people, like rearranging stuff when I already knew my whole schedule. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, I'm going to just tell me what to do, and I'll get it done. So I ended up doing like a handful of these projects. I mean, nothing crazy, but yep. I was doing what I needed to do the way I needed to do it with one hand. And once I was all healed and I was out of the sling, it kind of took off. And I developed a good relationship with Ms. Flug to the point where senior year came and I wouldn't go to my classes. I would
just
stay
out there.
In there. So I got like AP credits doing work with her, and she helped me. Like, I didn't want to go to college, and my parents talked me into it. Like, it's something you need to degree. You need to do. Degree is what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So she helped me find like a good path. She helped me build a whole resume, doing artwork and building things with her. And I guess to make a long story short, bringing me to where I am now, she kind of built my foundation of what an actual artist, I guess, in like a professional world would be.
Hmm.
Like how to build a resume, how to promote yourself here and there. But she also helped me critique my skills and fine-tune, like, small details.
Right.
Telling me, like, what separates, like, a hobby as an artist to being able to actually put out a product and a final piece that someone would want or that someone would want to purchase.
Right.
So she kind of put me in like the right mindset of what to do to get at that next level. So gotcha. Going off of her, I kept doing everything.
And she was all ceramics, right? She didn't really.
She was all ceramics and 3D, but okay. When it came down to doing like the drawing portfolio, there were a few other teachers like Ms. Zappa who helped me out. Mm-hmm. Ms. Rossiopi, she helped me. But because I started freshman year with Ms. Flug and I was in her room 24/7, she really put in the time to help me get right. to that next level. So going off of everything that she had taught me, I put it into my college work when going to school. But to make a long story short, I didn't fit in with those kids. I didn't like it. I didn't like what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I dropped out. Mm-hmm. So now I'm in a welding program. So I'm going to school. I got 3 years left on this bachelor's degree for welding. But in my free time and what I would like to do full time is the artwork. So coming back full circle, I've got my own company now, Kawadi Customs,
mm-hmm.
and I'm doing airbrush artwork and now digital artwork. And it's a lot of portraits, paintings. I've done 3 Harleys so far.
Nice.
And that is what I really enjoy doing, being able to like put out a final product. Like the portraits are cool, like, but they just hang up on a wall. Right. The artwork on the bikes, like I drive my bike around and I want to start taking it to shows, but I've had instances where I'll park at like a restaurant or someone and another Harley rider or another motorcycle rider will come up and be like, who did this? Like, this is great work. And I feel like not a lot of people can say I did this.
Right.
So right. It's cool. So that's what I would like to do full time. I'll get this welding job to pay the bills, get the benefits.
Right.
And then this will be the main side hustle. So.
I love it, dude. So when you started getting into airbrushing, like what pushed you in that direction? Because that's what I see the most of you doing, obviously. Yeah. You're doing, the digital work is more for like us. Like that's the stuff mm-hmm. that I'm actually buying from you. And that's the stuff that I kind of need for myself. But the airbrushing is the stuff that I see that's impressing the hell out of me.
Yeah. To me, I feel like the airbrush is more skill.
Right.
But, and that's, it's something I've spent a few years now trying to perfect. But what got me into airbrushing is I bought my first motorcycle in 2019. And I always wanted just an all black murdered out Harley. Excuse me. And so I started with an Iron 883, a Sportster. And I found a perfect one, all blacked out already. Pretty much everything I wanted to do to it was already done to it. So okay. I was pretty much buying my end goal. So it saved me a lot of money. And after probably about 3 or 4 months, like, this bike was awesome. And it was all blacked out. I loved it. But it wasn't mine. Like, I just bought someone else's bike.
You didn't do any touches to yourself.
Yeah, because I bought it pretty much as the end product that I already wanted to make it. So, I forget what started the conversation, but I was talking to my father one day, and he goes, like, if you want it, like, you're an artist. A lot of these guys that you see do artwork on, like, cars, a lot of automotive artwork is done with an airbrush. So, I don't know where exactly he found it, but he brings me to the garage, digs through all the endless crap that we have in there. And finds an old single action airbrush from, I think he said it was like 15 years old. He bought at a garage sale and just held on to it. So he pulls this thing out of wherever it was kept for 15 something years. And he's like, mess around with this. If you enjoy it, look into getting an actual airbrush. So, 'cause it was free of charge. I think I went down to Home Depot, got some cheap paint, found a piece of cardboard, and just did a few flame designs. And I was like, okay, like this isn't bad. I could see myself doing this.
Right.
So started doing a little more research, watched a few YouTube videos.
That's the way we all learn.
Mm-hmm. Went on Amazon, did some research, narrowed it down to like 2 different airbrushes.
Yep.
Ended up going, I think, with the cheaper one. And that just kickstarted me off. And so I built up after like a month or so of practicing with that airbrush. I did my first Harley. So I bought out went out, found on Craigslist a whole, like, a new set of tins. So I bought a new tank, a new rear fender, and a front fender, and completely customized the whole bike. Painted it from front to rear fender with this massive snake pattern. Do you remember that bike?
Oh, yeah.
With the skull on the tank, running the serpent all the way from the front fender down through the skull, like in and out of the mouth, and then down tail for the rear fender. And after I did that piece, I was like, well, shit, like I've got
some skill.
I've got some skill. So yeah. I started up like an Instagram page, started posting stuff there. And I figured, like, well, I don't have any more bikes, so what else am I going to do? So I started picking, like, other interests of mine. So I watch a lot of TV and movies when I do this work. So I'll just kind of, like, put it on in the background. But a lot of the stuff I enjoyed growing up, like favorite characters I've had,
right,
just started slapping them on portraits, on canvases, just working through, perfecting my skill. And it just kind of kept going. I kept practicing, would take steps back, look at other professional artists who are like actually making money off of this stuff, trying to compare my artwork to theirs to see what am I lacking and what's keeping me from like where I'm at right now and how do I get to their level.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the big issues I had for a while was like shading my colors, which is like what that photorealism picture, like the photorealism looks like.
Right.
So like if I go back through my artwork and I know one piece that sticks out at the top of my head. Do you remember that Joker one I did?
Yes.
The Heath Ledger and the Joaquin Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at that picture, it looks exactly like the two characters. Like you could tell exactly who it is.
Which, yeah, you can tell exactly which mm-hmm. Joker's which, 100%.
Yeah, and you can tell like where I got those like pictures from. But the shading wasn't the best. Like you could tell it's gotcha. A painting. So what I'm trying to work towards is that photorealism where,
so you're not really able to tell,
yeah,
if you're
like,
working on an artwork, it looks like it's a photo.
Yeah, I mean that's like the end goal.
Okay.
And that's what I feel like everybody works towards.
You want your artwork to look like it's
like top notch. Because I mean, why would I want to be anything below the
top
best?
Notch. Right.
So that's what I've been working on for 2019. We're 2022.
Three solid years at this point. Two and a half, three.
Yeah,
years.
I'd call it more two and a half because like put it down. Been gone for here and there for
yep,
all other
of course.
Shit. But
so. You have all this stuff that you're loving. You have, like, are you the kind of guy that's able to have, like, a hobby?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the three big hobbies I've had that I've had for a few years now, I'd say definitely my three main ones would be the art, so the airbrushing mm-hmm. and the digital artwork because...
Well, now it's turned into a job, though, so it's not much of a hobby.
That's like when I'm doing this stuff, it doesn't feel like I'm working though, which is why I enjoy it. Like,
right.
I don't feel like when you're asking me for these pieces, it's not like, all right, I got to set time aside to do this for Sal. It's like, he wants this. I'm not going to give him, like, I'm excited. When I have an idea right. that pops into my head, like that George Washington one and the beam one,
mm-hmm.
when that idea popped in my head, like just to throw the eagle head, to kind of mash your idea with the original picture, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, this is a good right. idea. And then when it clicked, like, screw color, like this original photo is black and white. I'm going to keep that same
way.
Theme. Like I sat down, I think I might have put like 5 or 6 hours into that piece, like doing each individual eagle head for like, all 20 or 15 guys that are on
yeah,
the balcony. I was like, I finished it and I'm looked at the clock and I'm like, shit, like
you
I should have went to bed
time.
3 hours
yep.
ago. Like it's not a job. I'm making money doing my hobby.
That's awesome.
Which is, I mean, that's perfection.
Right. So your other hobbies though, I do want to talk about the big one.
Yeah. So I'll say that for last, then the motorcycles.
Of course.
I love that because I've been on a dirt bike since
as long
think
as I remember
I was
you.
Seven.
As long as I've known you, you've been on a bike.
Mm-hmm. Seven is when I got my first bike. My father bought me a Kawasaki 110. KLX-110.
Little crotch rocket.
I mean, now it would be a crotch rocket for me when I got it. I'm on my tippy toes. Like,
a huge bike.
Yeah, I remember my dad like teaching me and my brother how to ride, setting up cones in our backyard so we could actually practice. Like
weaving.
Yeah, because I mean, we're going from like bicycles to now like a 100-pound machine.
A motorized bike. Yeah,
big-ass fucking engine in it.
Yep.
So that was a big step up. And then that went
push off to the side and talk more to the mic. I got a feeling we're missing some.
I'm just like leaning around. This chair's moving.
Lounging. Oh yeah, my dad's probably gonna break it in a couple weeks.
But so that kicked off. Once we hit high school, I wanted to be on the road. So 15 years old, right on my 15th birthday. Moped went down time. To DMV, moped.
Moped time.
Mm-hmm.
That was something we shared.
Yeah, me, you, Vinny, Manna.
And Mike Riola.
Yeah, Riola had one.
Cooney.
Cooney had one for a while.
Yeah, a lot of boys in our grade had it, dude. I think our grade was like the most popular.
Probably the most with the mopeds. With the
mopeds. That was fun, dude. I fucking loved that thing.
Riding to school every morning. I didn't have to go on
when
the bus.
When nobody else our age was doing it, and it was just us, dude. Oh, so
that was
fun.
Great. Just pull up to the rec center, pull out like a lock, to and from school. But the best part about the moped was that was like your first taste of freedom.
Exactly.
Because no one else... Without the moped at 15 years old, unless you're stealing your parents' car, you don't have access to the road.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
just get out of your
house. Could go.
Just leave.
Yeah.
Don't need to ask my parents.
Can you drive me here or there? Nope. Just I'm going to be back at this time.
I'll
see ya. So the moped got me on the road. 17th birthday was went right down to DMV, got my motorcycle license, and I didn't have a bike at the time, but my father had a dual sport, so I would take his out on the road whenever I wanted. I then come 2019, like right after my 20th birthday, I bought myself my first motorcycle.
Yep.
So my father had a Sportster in 89. And he was on the road for like only a year. And I, now for my first bike, also got a Sportster.
That's pretty awesome.
And it was pretty cool. And I remember like the first day I pulled into the garage and like kill the engine. So like the smell's all in the garage. And he goes, "This is uncanny." I'm like, "What?" He's like, "This is the same smell from my bike back in the late 80s. And I'm like, "All right, that's pretty cool."
That's awesome.
So I had I used to compete bodybuilding and powerlifting, and that's a whole nother story. But there was one guy who I followed pretty much since I started, named Kalen Von Moger. And he rode a Harley Night Rod.
Okay.
And that was pretty much like my dream bike, my end goal. So I started on the Sportster, and I already knew what my next bike was going to be. But at the time, I was looking, and the bikes were way too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, I'll ride the Sportster for probably like 5, 6, 7 years until I got an actual job, and I could actually put money aside and build
and get
this
the bike.
Bike
that you actually want.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, make a long story short, I'm just checking Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace like once every few months, see what's out there for this Night Rod. And luckily for me, I found a real good one, like pretty low mileage, because a lot of these V-Rod bikes, they're all discontinued. So there's only a limited amount in the world now, and they're not going to make any more. So I found a good one, like 7,000 miles for, I think I paid $9,000 for the bike, all stock with an upgraded exhaust, so an Akrapovic. And I jumped on it, messaged the guy right away. He's like, "Nope, I still got it." I was down. I left school early that Friday, drove down to around the Trenton area, sat on it, took it down the road, rode back, and loaded it right onto the trailer.
Yep.
So I pretty much went down there, knew when I was going to buy it,
mm-hmm.
bring it full circle with Kawati Customs. I bought all custom pieces for that. So new front fender, new rear fender, new airbox cover, and a new radiator cover. Painted all that with this Viking Berserker theme.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's no other bikes. I've scourged the whole internet. This thing is one of a kind. Two-tone, golden bronze over the whole thing. And then to bring in my welding, I designed and welded my own custom headlight. So, I mean, you've seen the bike, but just mm-hmm. to describe it for your viewers,
mm-hmm.
I've got this like pyramid style.
If you send me a picture later, we could send up, we could show them a little picture of it. Okay. Too. I'll pop it
definitely.
In there.
Definitely. I'll no, send you definitely. A whole bunch of stuff. So I fully designed and welded this new headlight system, set it all up with LEDs, did all the wiring for it. So I've got this massive like triangle style headlight on the front of my bike.
Didn't it come like
bike.
In a line, right? The lights came in a line or
so
something like that?
So it came actually a side by side.
Okay.
And it didn't work out. It was spaced too far apart and I wanted right. three. So I had to buy two of these light systems. I had to break out, like cut the whole system apart because it was two individual light housings with a like a metal figure eight holding them into place. So I had to break this figure eight apart, weld it up, took like all my measurements of the housing to see exactly how I could fit it into what I needed. I needed to see what I needed to make to accommodate this housing system.
Right.
Because the housing system was, it was like all blacked out. It looked good. It was sleek. It was like this kind of teardrop mm-hmm. type of a look to it. And it just looked good. So came up with this whole design, found a bunch of scrap metal, welded this together, did all the wiring, slapped it on my headlight. To top it off, I needed to get a seat. So this company that I bought this rear fender from, it automatically came with a seat pan. And I'm guessing there was like an option to have them like make you the seat. But I'm like, screw that. It's my bike. I'm doing everything else. I'm going to watch some YouTube
this
videos.
This is like the coolest part of the bike in my opinion.
Yeah, learn how to do some leather work.
Right.
So I don't know how many hours I put into that seat alone. But I did some more research for like Viking patterns and Norse, I'm blanking on the exact, like knotwork, kind of like Norse knotwork art patterns, yeah. stuff like that. Celtic knots. So like this right. was a Norse themed like Celtic knot. So did that, carved it all in, hand molded the seat to actually, so I, starting over, I got this seat pan. So it's a fiberglass seat pan. Had to buy foam, build up the foam, sculpt the foam to like the exact size, the shape of the right. seat I wanted. Then had to carve my designs into the leather. And I think I ended up working with four separate pieces of leather. So I've got my main one for the seat itself. And I've got three side pieces.
Okay.
So went through, set this up, had to do research on how to mold leather to actually get it to fit to the seat. So there's a whole process you got to do, like wetting it, molding it, letting it dry properly so it doesn't get like actual mold. And then once that was all molded, I had to go through, learn how to stitch the leather now.
Okay.
So had to go through, watch a whole bunch of new videos, see different stitch patterns, see the best way to do it with the type of like lace that I needed. So I went through, found my patterns, had to airbrush the dye over it to get it the right color I wanted. Then went through and had to hand stitch this whole thing together and then had to glue it on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a whole nother project alone. And I mean, when I finished and that seat was the last part. And when I like, it's like a hinge. When I slid it down and slid it in place and shut it.
The feeling that you got.
Oh my, like I did the math. It was like 450 hours.
Just in total on
I
the bike.
Put into transforming yep. this bike. And finishing that has got to be one of the best feelings I've ever had.
Right.
Because now it's not just something like I mentioned before. Like, yeah, finishing an art piece is cool. And it hangs on my wall and it's cool to look at. But that's it. You just look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm on a piece of like my artwork that I could just ride around, and it's It's unreal. I love that feeling.
That's awesome, man. It's just so we're going to get some pictures for you guys just to see how insane this thing is, but it is one of the most beautiful bikes I've ever seen in my life.
I really appreciate that.
It really is.
Yeah, coming up with that idea and one being able to think of it and then actually being able to put it on, I'd say like pen to paper, but it's
not, it's your canvas basically.
Yeah, I mean that is my canvas in this case, but that's a good feeling.
Yeah, man. So that's your little toy.
Yes, that is definitely
your
my
most
toy.
Intriguing hobby that we all get to see. Is the one that just blows my mind sometimes.
Cliff jumping now.
Oh yeah.
You see what I just did this weekend,
dude? You were out in West Virginia, right?
Oh my god. Yeah. Is that
where you were, were you there all weekend, or were you kind
of 5 days?
Around?
First to the fifth. Oh. And I drove down, I think on the 30th. Got there at like 2:30 in the morning. I was asleep. Set up my tent. I was asleep by 2:45. Excuse me, and I was
dude,
just
you can fucking burp. But don't fucking matter. Nobody's gonna yell at you.
But yeah, so 5 days we jumped, and I went down, and this is probably my favorite trip so far. And I've traveled, I could pretty much say
all
over the country now. So like last summer, two summers. So what got me into this was COVID. Did you ever hear of Adams Creek, like in high school?
I feel like it's really familiar.
Yeah, so I heard about it in like middle school and high school, and it was, for anyone who doesn't know, it's this waterfall out in Pennsylvania. And all through middle school and high school, I feel like it was kind of just a rumor. Mm-hmm. Like, I heard a few kids who had been there who had jumped in, not a whole lot, small amount, and I just never had the time to go. So COVID hit, nothing to
Everyone
do.
Everyone had time, so except for me. I was working landscaping the whole time.
Yeah, well.
We never shut down.
I was happy. I took off, and it was, well, actually no, I was working at 900 Degrees, the pizzeria, and I was doing that 6 days a week.
Yep.
So I actually, excuse me, I only had one day a week was my Tuesday. And so I was working 6 days a week. Tuesday was my off day. Every single Tuesday, Adams Creek was a 50-foot jump. We hiked in, me and my buddy Ron Rumsby. And we hiked in, first spot, I was the only one to jump. It was just me and him. He didn't want to jump. He looked at it.
I remember him.
He was like,
no. We had a tough time doing the fucking jumps over at...
Oh, yeah, Split Rock.
Split Rock. Yeah.
That was only a 30-footer.
But I could say that I fucking did it at least.
Yeah.
I could say I'm not gonna be a bitch, but I remember him having a tough time doing that. He did it though. I remember having
Ron didn't have a tough time because Ron was front flipping the lower one with me.
No,
first.
No,
Irizarry had the tough time.
Oh no, you're right.
Matt had the
tough. No, you're right.
Ron
you're
and right. I, we had no issue. We've been doing this stuff now. Ron had no issue.
So he saw that 50-footer and he didn't do it the
well,
first time.
The one it wasn't the height that got to him, and this might have been stupid on my part, but there was a storm that ripped through, I think in 2017 or 2018.
Okay.
One of the hurricanes or some big storm.
Whatever.
So the pool that you jump into is completely filled with downed trees. And we had to there was one tree that goes right over the landing. And we had to move. This tree had like all branches sticking out, so it was not jumpable. So I'm like, screw this. I drove an hour. It took us like 40 minutes to hike in. Help me move this. And so we moved the tree out of the way. And this tree, we moved like as far as we could. And so we do this thing called depth checking, where you dive down. And my father always says like, oh, I don't know. He's just... He wants to be my father and say it's all dangerous, but the one thing that this depth checking does is it allows you to know, one, your depth.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're around like 15 plus feet, that's your sweet spot. 10 to 12 feet, you could jump, but it's a little sketchy.
Okay.
Like you'll land, and depending on how you land, like if you lean back a little bit in your entry, you can kind of scoop into the water.
And that way you can save yourself a little
bit.
Yeah,
so you're not hitting straight impact. Yeah. Like if you kind of like
if you
spread
go
your
straight,
arms out.
You'll probably
if
hit
you
the
pencil on a diving board, you'll go like 12 feet down. But
absolutely.
I've jumped I've jumped really high heights, and I'll build up to that. Yeah, we can get into that one. So, going back, we move this tree out of the way, and we're depth checking. So, it's plenty deep. I don't remember how deep it was, but I don't think either of us touched bottom.
Okay.
And, like, if I can't touch bottom, it's deep as hell. And I don't have to worry about it. But the issue was, there was a ledge about a few feet sticking out of the base of the waterfall, and that was only about 3 feet deep.
So you had to overjump that.
You had to clear the ledge, and then, so like, say here's my waterfall at the edge of the table. I had this ledge going out, and I had all these trees. Mm-hmm. So I had about an 8 foot pocket, like 8 feet probably in diameter, probably like a 4 foot radius, to drill at 50 feet in the air.
Mm-hmm. That's a little daunting.
Ron didn't want to do it, and I don't blame him, because it took me about a half hour of just standing over this cliff.
Just trying to plan yourself out.
I walked up, and I stood up there for probably like 20 minutes, not moving, not saying anything, just watching this spot of water. Mm-hmm. And I go, fuck this. No. I walked all the way down.
Yeah.
I packed my bag up, and I'm like, fuck this. No.
Right back up.
I depth checked again. Like, I was making splashes. I'm like looking, okay, this is like where this is. This is where I am now. This is my distance to the trees. This is my distance to the edge of the ledge. I'm dead center where I need to be. I'm looking up, I'm looking down, trying to like figure out my exact location in this little pocket of death. And I'm like, okay, let's go. So I walk back up, and I'm like, I'm breathing so heavy.
Yep.
And it probably took me another 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck this. I just got to go. So I give Ron this big countdown. 3, 2, 1. And it probably took me another 3 seconds. Like, I finished my countdown, and I'm just standing there.
Yeah.
And I just stepped off. And it was unreal. Because the moment I stepped off, I'm like, because these trees had all like branches and sticks sticking out. I'm like, yep. Please don't get impaled. Please don't get impaled. Please don't get impaled. I hit the water, and I just like brace for impact and get really tight. Like just hoping, like waiting to be stabbed
or something and hitting you. Yep.
And it didn't happen. And I swim up like, let's go.
That's awesome,
man. And I was hooked.
Yep.
So every single Tuesday, we went to new spots. We've been all through Pennsylvania. There was a few spots in New Jersey we went to. And it got to the point where we built up over that summer. I think I ended that summer, with a 30-foot front flip, a 30-foot back flip, and a 30-foot double back flip. And I was hyped. So go to school. Summer ends, go back to school, and neither of us really wanted to stop jumping because we were both hooked. Mm-hmm. Like, we were doing this once a week, every single week, for like the past 2-3 months. And we got addicted to this one YouTuber, Chase Reinford. His page is Adrenaline Addiction. And yeah. I mean, I lived watching that YouTube page all summer. Mm-hmm. And so all my YouTube, like my recommended, is all cliff jumping. Mm-hmm. And everything I'm seeing on YouTube is just cliff jumping, because I was living and breathing it. And I found this one video pops up, this quarry in Pennsylvania. And I had set this goal, like, I think we had built up at the end of the summer, we found this bridge with a 60-foot jump. And so I jumped this 60-foot bridge, and we had taped it and measured it, so I knew exactly what I was doing. And I'm like, 60, like, that's big. I want my end goal, like, my bucket list is triple digits, 100 feet.
Hit 100 feet.
And, like, there's very select few people who, like, have that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going through my YouTube videos, and I find this quarry.
Trying to find a spot.
90-foot cliff, and then I'm scrolling through the comments trying to find where it is. So someone tags the comment And, like, that's not a good idea because it blows up spots. You get cops. You get a lot of people who, like, don't respect the area, don't respect nature, and they'll leave garbage and beer bottles and all this other crap and stuff like that pisses me off.
So, piss off anybody who's really gives a shit about the world.
Yeah, but...
I mean, even when we went to fucking... I always forget the name. You go to Split Rock, dude. It's a fucking mess over there.
Mm-hmm. And that's why they try to keep people out, because people abuse it and they don't respect it. They think, oh, it's not my problem. I'm only here for one night. I'm just going to do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. So I guess luckily for me, they actually left the location. So I found this location, Google search it. Shit, it's less than an hour from my house.
Nice.
So I call up Ron. I'm like, I found this spot. We're going back this weekend. I leave school after my class on Friday, go down, and I set my record from 60 feet now to 80 feet. And there was a few guys who are in the area who I'm actually really good friends with now. And one of my good friends now, I did this 80-foot jump, and I didn't know him at the time, just over Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I see he goes there like 3 or 4 days after me. And they do this other spot at the same cliff. And I didn't realize it was jumpable at the time. So I did this 80-foot jump and we just left. Mm-hmm. So my one good buddy, his name's Ryan, he ends up backflipping it 80 feet. And that's how it blows my mind. And this other guy, he's massive. I'm friends with him now, Geo Masters, but that kid's insane. He's like sponsored by Nitro Circus and all that stuff. So he puts a trampoline. There's this one other cliff, 106 feet, and he puts a trampoline on it.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and Geo's out of his mind. So I'm like, I just did 80 feet. If he can put a trampoline on 106 feet, I'll just go back and I'll straight jump it.
106.
So I go back the next week. So I do this 80 foot, go back to school, finish my classes on Friday, go back home, go right back, same spot, and I add 26 feet to my highest jump, 106 feet. And that jump wrecked me.
Yeah.
That jump absolutely like obliterated my body. And I don't know why, because I landed, like, perfectly.
So what's the difference? So the 80-foot didn't do nothing to you? I don't want to say nothing, but it
really didn't wreck havoc. No, 80-foot was smooth. Yeah. But the one thing I've heard is that the shoes I was wearing... So when I did the 80 feet, I wasn't wearing shoes. So when you wear shoes, I mean, just, like, making... Just looking at it. Like, one, you have, like, a thick sole on the bottom... Mm-hmm. And, like, when your foot goes into water, like, barefoot, it just kind of slips in. Like, there's not a lot of, like, I'm blanking on the word. Like, you're not displacing the water. Like, it's not like, if you were to drop, I guess the best way for me to describe it would be, like, if you pencil into the water, it's a smooth entry. But if you belly flop, there's so much more, like, surface area. Like, right. It just stops you. Like, it hurts. Like, there's a good way to enter and a bad way. So I guess the shoes would be like the equivalent of like belly flopping. And I had jumped barefoot before. These shoes, I was wearing like big, thick, treaded running shoes. Because like it was colder and I don't know. I figured let me wear layers.
Right.
Because it was like 80 degrees and then it had dropped down to like 60. Because we're in like October now. Mm-hmm. So we were starting to get like the fall weather and the temperature had dropped. So I'm like, I'm just going to wear like some clothes, stay warm. And I wasn't thinking about wearing the shoes.
So you were thinking about displacement.
The water displacement is just significantly more. So I hit the water and I mean my body got ripped apart.
Yeah.
Like for the 80 foot, I went right in smooth. I hit the water and I think one of the other issues I had is you're supposed to hit the water like tense, like a brick. So you enter all the way. I think I was too loose.
Interesting because, that you were loose on the one that's that.
Because I was just trying to stay calm.
Okay.
Like, I walked up and now doing, like, the tricks I have done and building up to bigger stuff, like, if you think about it, like, you get in your head and you start to second guess yourself. Mm-hmm. And like 106 feet is massive.
It's huge.
Like triple digits is unreal. And I didn't want to get to that point where like I got scared and backed out.
Right.
So I showed up like, I'm doing this. When I told my person who I showed up with, like, I'm doing this, like, he got himself situated in the water to spot me. So if anything happens, he's right there in the water.
Just grab you. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So he got, like, situated, and then I went up. And I literally walked up, tossed a rock to get an idea of, like, the free fall, like, the air time.
Right.
The rock hit the ground. I gave him my count, and I just stepped off. So, like, I just zoned out.
Right into it.
I wasn't thinking about anything.
Oh, shit.
And literally just walked up to the edge of this cliff, took a few breaths, and just stepped off. And I was relaxed. I wasn't thinking about anything. I just stepped off. And I was just, like, free falling. Came together, but I didn't tense up. And I think, like, staying loose and with the shoes, my body got ripped every which way, and I couldn't breathe. Like,
sucked the air out of you.
I was winded so bad. I mean, 106 feet high, how deep do you think you should go in the water?
I couldn't make a guess. I'd think you're at least touching, like, 20 feet.
Yeah, I probably went about 6 or 8 feet deep.
That makes sense, just because you didn't...
I hit the water and just got ripped apart. I didn't go deep at all, but it took the breath like out of me. Like, I was one arm, like, I stuck my hands up and broke surface.
Jesus.
I was that close. And my one friend, like, I came up and I just couldn't breathe. And I'm like... and... my one buddy like swims over and he goes like, shh, like, are you okay? Like, I'm not breathing. I could barely move, like, just enough to stay afloat.
Like, try to get over to the
so shore. He grabs me and he goes like, are you okay? And I kind of push him off because like I could stay like afloat by myself, but like I'm barely moving. I go, fucking awesome. And oh my god, it took probably to swim like 50 feet, took me like 15 minutes, yeah. Just slowly moving. Just
wading your way over.
I pulled myself up onto like the shoreline, I guess you could call it. And I don't know what the hell actually happened to me, because I like laid down and I immediately got like vertigo. I felt like I was going to throw up. Like, I looked at my hand, it looked like I was looking through the back end of a telescope. Like, my hand looked like it was 15 feet away. I didn't black out, but my vision went, like, white.
Really?
And it was awful. Like, I could barely sit down. My tailbone was all kinds of fucked up. My back, like, after, and I still have issues with it today.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might have tore a muscle or really strained it,
mm-hmm.
or did something bad. I went to a few doctors like months later because I didn't want to deal with it. It was like, I don't know, I didn't think anything of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had one doctor like tell me I might have like dislocated a rib and it might have popped back into place. And then another one said like that he doesn't think that was like the
case.
Yeah, because like the way I impacted, like that's not a way a rib dislocates. So he said I might have tore a muscle, and he thinks it was like my lat, because that's the muscle.
Oh, okay.
I've got a bad issue with that now. Like, I'll wake up sore. Like, honestly, if I'm airbrushing or when I'm welding.
Like, in one spot for 2 months or something.
Like, if I'm hunched over, it becomes excruciating, and it's really tight. But it was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll ever do.
I was going to say, you think you'll ever try to go back and do it again?
So now, this will bring me to like what I've been doing recently now.
It's a good thing to end on, dude. It's a good thing to end on.
I might do triple digits again, but the issue was I did this in a quarry, so the water is still. So it's like
that makes sense though, because when you're flat, they do water. Say that, like when you enter like water that has just a little chop to it, it gives you something.
The surface tension is broken.
Yes, the surface tension's already broken. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about you being the one causing that still water.
Yeah. So I've got a few friends who have jumped over 100 feet. And they say they'd never do it in a quarry. Like, a few of them have done it in quarries. I know
okay.
three guys who have done this same jump. They didn't have an issue with it, but I've got other friends who say like they'll never do it in a quarry because the impact is so heavy. But
it's really interesting to me that 80 feet and 106 feet, the difference.
But I feel
would you be confident going right back to the 80 footer in that quarry though?
I honestly don't know if I'll ever do that height in a quarry. Just because there's a potential that like you could have that same thing happen again.
Regardless.
Yeah, just because I mean it's a dangerous game.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole thing's a dangerous game.
But adding that factor on, like quarry impact is just a lot heavier because of the surface tension and because like with the still water, the impact is just so much heavier. But so that was my first year. And after I did that 100-foot jump, I had a few guys reach out to me, like comment on that post. And they're like, crazy jump, awesome jump. Like, who do you jump with? I'm like, no one. Like, what crew are you part of? Because in the cliff jumping community, there's a handful of, I guess, like branded groups. And I guess real quick, there's one in Vermont called the Vermonters. There's one in like the PA area called, I think they're Cliff Life. And then there's one like out west, the Cliff Cruise guys.
Right, right.
And so I got into this one group and they weren't branded or anything, but it's just a group of, when I was with them, when they invited me, it was this massive group chat of like 30 guys. And we ended up like making separate group chats and stuff. And it's like pretty much the same spot. So I jumped all, this is what, 2022? All 2021, I jumped with these guys. And they had me, I entered the group with like just a 30-foot front flip and a 30-foot back flip. And I don't even throw the front flip anymore because it just scares me.
Really?
So, 30-foot gainer. Excuse me. That was the other one. So they pretty much showed me all their spots, and they took me around. A handful of them I had already been to. And they started teaching me, like, their styles and just being around these guys. Just, like, the vibe is unreal. It's all these dudes who are throwing these massive, crazy tricks. And like if you're there, you can't help but to try and learn something new, kind of to get on their level. Like everyone's there. It's not competitive in the least bit, and that's what I love. But everybody will push you to better yourself. Not like, I can do this and you can't. It's like, if you want to learn this, I'll show you how to do it. Like, let me help you. And that's probably one of the main things that I love about this group and these guys.
That's awesome, dude.
So,
like, watching it from the outside, man, it looks like I knew from the second that I did that fucking 30-foot jump
rock,
that I would not be doing it again, probably, and that I did it to say I can do it because I'm a fucking man.
Yep.
But that's not my fucking thing, and I'm proud to fucking know that I've done it, and I'm over with it.
No, but I mean, that's perfectly fine.
But seeing it from the outside, dude, I would hope that you never let this shit go. Until your body can't take it anymore, of course.
Yeah, well, I'm probably pushing that real soon. So, end of my second year now with my whole crew. I built up from, I had a 30-foot backflip and a 30-foot gainer. I built up to a 65-foot gainer. And I ended up learning a new trick called a dub front half. So it's a double front flip with a half twist.
Okay.
So it's a front flip to front half. And I learned that trick at about 25 feet and brought it up to 80 feet in about a month and a half.
How was that at 80 feet?
Unreal. I mean, the free time is just crazy. Yeah, and it's like, nuts. Looking at when I was standing on the edge of this cliff, we were in West Virginia, the same place I was just at, just falling and just looking at how small. So like we had a few spotters in the water and there was a few guys on shore who were filming. And I mean, they look like ants. Right. And it's like, I'm about to go from here and fall this distance
to there.
And like the one thing that was crazy about the 100-foot jump was like, I could see the water the whole time. But now, like, the single flip is one
thing.
You're
doing a trick, and you're at some point, you're looking at the sky.
Oh, it's unreal. So, like, the front flip, like, you just go, and it's like you finish one flip, okay? And now I'm doing another flip, and I'm starting my second flip, like, 60 feet above the water, and I'm just watching the water just get closer and closer to me in, like, a few seconds, and it's unreal. So finishing that summer was crazy because I had built up, I had progressed a lot.
Right.
Like that summer, I didn't learn a lot of tricks, but I built my height up from flips. I added 50 feet to my height of flips, which was crazy. And then going into this summer, so like a lot of my friends are just out of their minds. Like they're throwing like triple flips. I have one friend, Ryan, who I mentioned earlier, just stomp his second triple, and this was nice. A front flip to front half to back flip.
What the fuck?
So that trick is called a trip hope. I actually attempted that last summer off a trampoline. We put a trampoline on a 40-foot cliff.
Okay.
And I went for this trick, the front to front half to back, and I under-rotated the back. And okay, I belly flopped. So you probably
belly flopped. Ugh.
I blew my contact out of my eye. My chest and my legs were immediately bruised, and I was coughing up blood for about 48 hours. Like just handfuls of blood.
That's horrible. That's horrible.
But I mean, I love it.
Worth it.
It was worth it. Oh my God. It's crazy.
Dude, that's awesome, though.
So this trip that I just did, and I got back, Tuesday?
Yep.
So I got back on
Sunday or
less than 48 hours ago. And so this trip that I just did, I went down with one goal in mind. I wanted to relearn my double backflips. Okay. So I threw one the Saturday before we left at 30 feet, and that was like the highest I've ever thrown it at. And I did it again after 2 years. It's like, okay, if I could bring this up to like 50 feet, which is like one of the higher cliffs there, mm-hmm. I'll be happy. And I had one friend who goes, some of these kids are unreal. Cam is his name, and he's the one who actually brought me into this whole crew. And Cam will pretty much get anyone off a cliff. Like if they're thinking it, he'll hype them up and he'll get them off.
That's awesome.
And he starts jumping and he's getting like really into it. And he's like, he walks up to me and I'm like contemplating. I'm just thinking about like what trick to do next. And he's like, dude, go for the double backflip. I'm like, this is our warm-up day. Like we're here for 4 more days and that's my end goal. He's like, fuck it, man. Just go for it. You got it. And there was another kid with me who wanted to bring one of his tricks up called the Sukahara. So that's a front half to backflip. And he's like, I'll go for my trick. If I do this, you do yours. And I'm like, fuck. I'm like, okay. You do it. I'll go for it. And so he does it and he stomps his. And I'm like, fuck. And the adrenaline rush is why I do it.
Mm-hmm.
But feeling my heart, like, actually, like, I could feel my heartbeat in, like, my ears. My heart is just pounding.
It's like Cartoon Network when it's coming out of the fucking chest.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, this thing's, like, sticking out here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got butterflies in my stomach. My heart's pounding. My adrenaline is through the roof. I'm nervous as hell. Like, I'm almost shaking on the edge of this cliff. And I'm like, all right, fuck it. I just got to go for it. So there's this thing that these people call flow state. And it's kind of like that point where you start to lean back or where you start to like kind of where you accept the fact that I'm about to jump off this cliff.
Right.
And everything you're thinking of just goes out the window. Like there's almost no thought at all. And your body just kind of naturally takes over. So, like, my countdown ends. Our, like, signature thing is, like, 3, 2, 1, send it. And I just lean back. I throw my arms and my head back, and I finish this first flip. It comes around. I spot the cliff again. I throw my head back a second time, come around, see the water, and just right in.
You nailed it.
And being how nervous I was about 2 seconds before to just the feeling of accomplishment.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
I can imagine that.
It's crazy. So I get up, everyone's like cheering me on, clapping me on the back, and like that's another one of the best things. Like everyone's so supportive and like it's crazy. Right. Like they all know like what you're going through because they've been there themselves. Mm-hmm. Whether like some of my friends have an unlimited arsenal of tricks, but they were where I was at one point, so like they know how I feel. And the people, like, there's a handful of people who, like, may not have the same height as me or the same tricks, but they know how they get when they try something new themselves. So everyone knows, like, exactly how you feel in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just crazy. So this one guy, his name is Mike, who told me, like, if you do it, I'll do it. Or, like, if I do it, you gotta do it. So we started bullshitting about like other tricks we had in mind because we both PR'd those tricks. And he goes, I'm like, I've always wanted a double gainer, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen. And he goes, me too, man. And like 2 minutes later, he walks back up to me and goes, I'm going to do the double gainer. And I'm like, fuck.
Because now you know.
Because I know if he did it, I had to do it. And honestly, this whole trip, we pushed each other, like, just trying to, like, one up. And, like, he did it. And I'm like, fuck. And my heart's racing again. And I didn't think I'd have this feeling, like, for the rest of the trip. And he goes and stomps it. And I'm like, shit. So my heart is, like, back in my chest. I'm, like, sweating. I'm shaking again. Double gainer, and this is the first time I've ever attempted it. Came right in feet first. Nice. I'm like, holy shit.
Nice, dude.
So that's our warm-up day done, and we finished. I finished my end goal for the trip like halfway through the warm-up day and then some.
Right.
And then we start going through the rest of the trip. We're in like day two, it rained, so we just kind of went back. We were jumping in the rain, just kind of keeping it like a little.
Kind of got to be a little relaxed in that.
A little more relaxed, and of course, everyone jumping. Like you start doing, a whole bunch of other crazy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're doing like handstands and like jumping back and doing like hand plants on the cliff and falling into backflips.
Yeah, I saw those. Yep.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That looked awesome, man.
So then we get boats on the third day, which was awesome because you don't have to hike in or drive to these spots. It's literally, it was like we got 2 boats this trip. Everyone's just relaxing. We had a few drinks on the boat.
Of course.
Just enjoying the sun, driving around, stopping at like all different spots. Because like when you drive in, it's kind of like a one and done.
Like you have to pick your spot.
Like you pick your spot pretty much.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But with the boats, like we have the whole lake open to us. So it's like one spot to the next to the next. And that was crazy. So I ended up PRing my backflip, my double backflip, another 10 feet.
Nice.
So I hit that at 65 feet. And that was kind of like the big thing for that day. Then later that day, we were just driving around the lake and just looking for random stuff. And we ended up finding a cliff that no one had jumped before. And at least no one in our group had jumped before. So we like climbed this lake we were at. It's also known for rock climbing. So it's a man-made lake. So all the cliffs have like these grooves cut into them. And they're perfect hand and foot holes. So we spot this one cliff. We jump into the water. We climb up like the side of this waterfall. It was beautiful. We climb up the side of this waterfall. We hike through the woods, find where the cliff is, and we just throw some rocks off, kind of to judge the height. It's like that's kind of how you have to do it if you don't have a tape measure, which we didn't at the time. So we're looking over. I thought it was about like 50, 55 feet. Some of my friends thought it was like 65 feet. So they all like, I'm not feeling it. I'm like, fuck it, I'll do it. So I throw one trick off that I'm comfortable with, the dub front half, and I laced it.
Nice.
So we go back the next day, we measure it, ends up being 60 feet.
Okay.
And I was the only one to jump it again. So they ended up naming that spot after me. And it would be pretty cool if it sticks, because right now it's in like this little corner, and they're calling it Kawadi's Corner right now.
I love that.
So that was actually pretty funny.
That's funny.
And then to finish the trip, my one friend Mike, who gave me the idea of the double gainer, I had no intention of doing it again. So he decides to just go up to this 62-foot cliff and throw the double gainer off. And he landed a little heavy, but he pretty much landed on his feet. Like, I'd call it a decent entry, but he could have cleaned it up a little more. So I'm like, we go to later that day. I'm like, okay, Mike, you didn't want to tell me you're doing the double gainer, so I'm going to do it now, and I'm going to add another like 8 feet to it. So we go to this other cliff, the 70-foot cliff, and I was, again, nervous as hell. I wasn't sure if I was going to do it. Like, it was a 2-mile hike in, and I'm just like walking in with my head down, just watching my feet go, and I'm just thinking about this one trick. And my one buddy John goes, "What are you thinking?" And I'm like, "I don't know." Because like, I feel like if I told someone, then I kind of have to do it.
Yeah.
So my one buddy Ryan comes up, and he's crazy. He threw his second triple, and he's like, "What are you thinking?" And I'm like, "I'm kind of thinking about the double gainer again." And he's like, "You've got this." So I walk up to the edge of the cliff, and there's like this window from when you get up, and I talked about it before with the 100-foot one, where you kind of got to jump in this sweet spot before you start to like get in your own head and overthink about it.
Right.
So I walk up to this cliff, and ideally I want like all the cameras to get like all the different shots, because a lot of this stuff is like one and done.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my friends, Ryan's younger brother, Kyle, he had like a drone. We had a few GoPros all there. But I looked over the edge, and that time came where like I knew I could do it. And I didn't want that window to close where I start getting like really nervous about it. So my one friend in the water, his nickname's Beatles, I'm like, "I got to go now. Like, I need to go. Because like I'm feeling it. Yeah. Like I'm in the zone right now. I need to go." Mm-hmm. So I'm like, "Beatles, I'm coming." I turn back to Ryan. I'm like, "Do you have the camera?" Because I needed at least one camera. And he's like, "Yeah, I've got you." And I turn around. I look over the edge for like another second. And I'm like, turn around. 3! And I'm just like screaming, like just to kind of zone out.
Get yourself like, in there, yep.
Get in the mindset. Like everything's nervous. Like I'm so nervous. Just screaming, kind of trying to get my mind off it a little bit. And I took like 3 big steps, sprint towards the edge of this 70-foot cliff, throw my arms back and hurl my body into it. And I feel like the craziest part is, like, if I go back through my memory, all I remember is takeoff. I remember spotting, like, the shoreline across. And I, like, almost panicked because I laid out the first one, which is not what you want to do. Like, the ideal for this trick is to tuck the first one to get it over with and lay the second flip out.
Gotcha.
Because you can spot it. So when you lay it out, you slow your rotation down so you can spot the water. Actually
get your entry point.
Yeah. So you can judge how high you are, whether you need to like
over-rotate,
tuck a little bit or under, speed it up or slow the rotation down. So I've been drilling my gainers, just laying them out for the past like 2 years now. And that's how I brought it up to 65 feet, just laying them out. And so I was so used to doing that, I laid out this first flip.
And forgot and the second one.
I didn't forget about it, but I felt like when you get probably past like 30 feet, you start to really feel the air time. And it's like, okay, I'm not jumping off like a diving board. where like I step off and I'm immediately in the water. Mm-hmm. Same thing with like a high dive, like a 12-foot high dive. At least in my mindset, you jump off and you're in the water.
Pretty much.
At 70 feet, you feel yourself falling.
You should have what, like 7 seconds pretty much?
No. 100 feet is about 3 to 3.5 seconds of airtime.
So you should have like 2, 2.5 seconds.
Yeah, so you're about 2, 2.5 seconds. But when you're falling and there's like nothing to catch you and you're flipping, it's a lot of airtime. Right. So I laid this first one out, spotted the shoreline. I'm going into the second flip, and I'm like, fuck, I need to get this second flip done with, or I'm going to land on my back and knock myself out. Because we had one person almost knock themselves. We had two people almost knock themselves out on their trip on 60 and 65-foot cliffs, and it's sketchy. So I'm not like, it's too fast to think about it.
Right.
Like once you go off, I feel like your eyes are just taking in the scenery and your body is just naturally reacting. So like there's no thought in it whatsoever. Like I go into this trick knowing what I need to do. And once you step off, it's just kind of like a natural reaction. It's like muscle memory to a certain degree. So I feel myself falling. I spot like the ground, and
try to give yourself like 5 minutes because the GoPro is gonna die. That's why I keep checking it.
You're good. So I guess to summarize that last trick: spot the air, and my body just naturally tucks into a ball. The flip comes around, and my body just naturally like extends, and I went right in smooth.
Good entry.
Nice. Perfect entry. I felt like no impact. Nice. It was just smooth as hell. So that was
just... So you hit two double gainers.
I had two double gainers, had no intention of doing one, brought that up to 70 feet, which is now my second highest flip overall. And dude, I love this sport.
That's awesome, man.
I love this.
You have to love it because you just talked about it for probably like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Dude, I fucking love it. It's crazy. But everybody, before my camera dies, this was fucking Kevin Kawadi with Kawadi Customs.
Mm-hmm.
And fuck, dude, we're going to have you back on again.
Definitely.
This is a lot of fucking fun.
This was a good talk.
I enjoyed it. Everybody?
Thank you for watching We the Patriots podcast. Until next time. I'm going to make all these bitches say, damn, I wish I were the fucking state. I want to be something, not nothing. Trapped inside my dream and I'm running. Running away from these demons, but the feeling's so good, I'ma keep dreaming.